Today I want to talk about healing cellular memories of abandonment. If abandonment is one of the standard experiences that we have in our lives, it makes sense that we would want to understand it better to see how it might impact us later on in life. And I'm thinking, with a little bit of introspection, we would go, you know, a lot of what we do, a lot of what we don't do, is predicated upon the idea that we're seeking to avoid the pain or the fear of the pain of abandonment. Experiences that we have early in life can make a huge difference in our lives at that point, obviously, but also in the future lives, because what we have been impacted by in early childhood is significant events, significant energy exchanges, but they're even more significant in that our ability as infants, even before we're born, little babies or infants being born, that we don't really have a defense system that allows us to deflect some of these incoming environmental signals, things that we feel, things that we hear, things that are expressed to us physically, that is through the sense of touch. And then as we are born, of course, the things that we see. So all of that information that's coming to us, because we have a limited ability to value it, this is important, this is not important, this pertains to me, this doesn't pertain to me, we would take all of that stuff in and use it in the construction of our individuality, that is, our new sense of being a person, separate and distinct from what we've previously experienced in the last, say, 9 months, in which we would have been part of the whole, and now all of a sudden we are separate and distinct from the whole, in this case being what we perceive to be our mothers. And so in this new state, it's really easy for us to say, ah, you know what, I am vulnerable. That was pretty easy to see. And early processing as an infant is this ability to recognize that we're separate and distinct from other people. And shortly thereafter, that they are larger than we are. So all of these things all come into play in regards to the sense of being abandoned. You can imagine that the physical act of being born with all of the drama, with all of the pain, creates cellular memories for us. And when there is fear and other emotions for the mother and the people present at that birth, say the attending doctors or nurses or midwives and so on, those emotions become part of the memories of the baby. Now, I think this is why it is real valuable for us to have a greater understanding of what our early experiences, that literally, what life was like at conception, what for our parents, and consequently we were impacted by that, what was going on for our mothers and our families of origin while we were in utero, because those things are going to impact us. What was our birth experience like? Was it filled with drama? Was it the problem? Was there some sort of complication? What was going on with the medical staff that was attending the birth? All of those things are inputs that shape and give content to our memories. It's been shown scientifically, it's been shown that when babies are born and immediately given to the mother to hold, the sense of connectedness that that baby is going to feel, which is the opposite, I'll say, of abandonment, so that sense of connectedness is established for the baby and for the mother. Mothers heal more quickly. They bond to their children more effectively. They're able to nurse them better if they're handed the baby immediately upon birth. And that baby, instead of being rushed away and rushed away to be cleaned and dressed and whatever else they do to a newborn baby, as if it needs this preparation, traumatizes the baby, disconnects the baby, contributes to the sense of abandonment. We go, not that good of a strategy. The three experiences that Christ mentioned in the book, Christ Returns, reveal startling truth that we have at birth: abandonment, insecurity, and loss of privacy. Those are pretty easy to visualize, but to me they sound like the same experience, just described from three different angles, three different aspects. I bet there have got to be many, many ways for us to describe abandonment and how an individual would interpret an experience and go, oh, yeah, that's abandonment, and so on. But let me just use a couple of words. Disconnection and aloneness are two of the ways that I would describe it. As an infant, as we're coming to terms with our new physicality, and you can imagine, this is how I do it anyway, that the baby is familiar beforehand with spirit life. And that seems to me very easy to imagine as a great sense of connectedness. And now this consciousness is inside of a physical container. It's like, and the physicality is a relatively new experience, certainly in this lifetime. And like, what is this all about? I think coming to terms with that physicality can be scary. For us not to want the feelings of abandonment makes perfect sense. It's important to the survival of our species. If we didn't have some sort of impulse inside that said, abandonment, not good, stay connected, that our species would have been maybe extinct. We would have had a lot more difficulty trying to survive. You can imagine that one individual alone in a hostile environment has a greater chance of death than, say, a group of individuals, a tribe, working together, mutually supporting one another, sharing roles and contributing to the benefit of other people over the course of a day or week, a month, a year. Maybe this is proof of that old adage, there is strength in numbers. In terms of a tribe, chances are there is a better chance of that tribe surviving than just an individual on his or her own. I had an experience in childhood that I have never fully understood. It involved Father Flanagan's Boys Town, and my parents must have donated to this charity because we used to get mailings on a regular basis. And Father Flanagan's Boys Town was the subject of a movie that I saw sometime later, but it was for orphaned children or runaway boys or boys that couldn't live at the homes of their family of origin for whatever reason. On the mailings was a picture, a drawing of a boy carrying a smaller boy on his back going across the snowy field. That picture used to really hold my attention. And so this is the experience that I had. I have a brother, John, who is older by 2.5 years. At multiple times during early childhood, when I would see that mailing show up or I'd see a calendar with the picture of the Boys Town logo on it, I would plead with my father and my brother to reassure me that that picture was of John and me, that John was carrying me on his back, that I wasn't going to be abandoned. And I wasn't pleading, that's John, me, right? That's us, right? To be cool or to be prideful. I was doing it out of some deep sense of insecurity, some fear of abandonment, some fear of alonement that I didn't understand, that didn't seem to make any sense to me, but it was so deep within me that all I can do is conclude that I had some sort of a fear, cellular memory, this life, some life, of being abandoned, being alone, that made things really risky or dangerous for me and my survival. Now, I hadn't thought of this in years and years. And it makes sense that this would be a great cellular memory for me to look at and to heal. If we're coming with cellular memories of abandonment and they are going to impact our future behaviors, the way we think, the way we feel, the way we speak, and the way we act, it makes sense that we would want to heal those. And the same is going to be true if we have a sense of insecurity. That sense of insecurity that we would have acquired, if you will, at birth impact us, our thinking, feeling, speaking, and acting for the rest of our lives unless it is healed and ditto with our perception that we've lost privacy. It is going to impact our future lives. So, really, healing the cellular memories of abandonment could be the beginning of a tremendous shift on a lot of different levels for us and our place in the world. As we all know, much like beauty, abandonment is in the eye of the beholder. If a person perceives that they're abandoned, they're abandoned. Some people would look at a minor event and go, that's no big deal. Other people will look at that minor event and go, man, that's catastrophic abandonment. They go, okay. We can certainly appreciate that as little children or infants, it is really important for us to have a connection to loving, caring, protecting people who, as they're doing this, they're validating our existence and they make us know our existence is good. Now, many of us have experiences that are different than that, but that would be the ideal scene, right? Caring, loving, validating, protecting, that would be great. So if we didn't have these experiences of loving support, we would have experienced abandonment. So along with abandonment is vulnerability, that sense of being vulnerable. And this is when we take steps to try to reduce the feeling of vulnerability. And if we don't have the means to meet our own needs, the needs I use are the seven steps of survival, freedom, usefulness, love, identity, the need to be right, the need to look good, get approval. But for an infant, I'm thinking that maybe not all of those are in play. Survival, the freedom, that is to be able to move our arms and legs, be able to squawk when we want to, love, and our identity. That identity is always changing, always growing, always expanding, and we're discovering our physical identity, our individuality, right after birth. It's like, ooh, hey, I'm separate. Exactly. So if we've experienced abandonment, what do? This is what we do. We develop strategies to deal with it. This doesn't feel good. This doesn't feel good. Number one, as human beings, I think we are meaning givers. I need to make sense out of what I'm experiencing. What's going on? Why is it going on? What did I do? How did I cause this? Those kinds of things. And so I want to know why I'm feeling what I'm feeling. And I want to reduce the pain or the discomfort or whatever it is I'm feeling, unless it's pleasure or comfort. So, what do we do? What are the strategies? I think that we can look at some common strategies that we will adopt in order to avoid the fear of the pain of abandonment. Now, let me just go over that phrase a little bit. There's abandonment. There's the fear of abandonment. There's the pain of abandonment. Sometimes, almost like a panic attack. For most people, panic attacks is a one-time experience, and then from that point on, it is the fear of panic attacks that is the problem. Not the panic attack. It is the fear of the panic attack. So it is the fear of the pain of abandonment that I believe is really at play here for most of us in later years of our lives. So what common strategies can be adopted by a child and be implemented even for the rest of our lives to 80-100-year-old person, number one, is to be perfect. We try to be perfect. We try to be so good. We try to be so valuable. We try to not make waves. We try to not cause a commotion or turmoil or upset in anybody or anything. If we can be so good, so loved, nobody would want to abandon us. I mean, they would be like, if anything is going wrong in their lives, they would never, ever attribute it to us and cut us loose. Get out of my life. Get out. It would never happen. So being perfect, being so goody-goody, is a strategy used by a lot of people. Second thing is to be controlling of everyone and everything so that abandoning me is not an option. I got you in a headlock, figuratively speaking, you can't let go of me. I'm the one I'm the sole decision maker about if and when somebody is let go. I do the letting go. You don't do the letting go. And so that controlling of everything and everybody shows up in relationships. Preemptive abandonment is another. That's because we believe that it's inevitable that we're going to be abandoned. We cut them loose beforehand. Hi, I abandon you. Hi, I reject you. Hi, I don't like you. Or let's skip the hi. I automatically don't like this person. You don't know him. Yeah, well, if he got to know me, he would, you know, find fault with me. He would see who I really am and, you know, my non-perfect nature, and then I would be abandoned. But because there's pain in that shock of being abandoned, being dropped, I can't stand that. I can't stand that. So I'm just going to preemptively reject other people. I'm going to preemptively abandon other people first. A fourth way is withdrawal. This is a tactic of I'm just not going to engage, that I'm not going to connect. I'm just going to hold myself back. It appears to other people as like, oh, this is aloofness. Oh, this is shyness. This is a superiority. This is inferiority. It is a person who said, you know what? This is oftentimes connected to a depressed, what's the use point of view or attitude. I know it's useless. It's not going to result in connection. It's not going to result in good feelings. So I am going to just stay out of it entirely. I'm going to withdraw. Substitution is a big thing. That's a big strategy commonly used. People use substances or activities or other people as a solution to the fear of the pain of abandonment. You know, the holisms, alcoholism, workaholism, people exercising to extremes, sex, you name it. A lot of different activities show up here. The solution to all problems requires more awareness, more information, more knowledge than was present in order to establish the problem. And this is kind of like a variation of languaging that is attributed to Einstein. You know, the solution to a problem has got to involve a different viewpoint, a different way of seeing things than the viewpoints that caused the problem in the first place. So the solution has got to involve different awareness than the problem. You go, yeah, that makes sense to me. That makes sense to me. So if you think about it for a second and say, the solution to the problem of abandonment, that fear of the pain of abandonment that we would have had from the earliest moments of our lives, maybe from conception and up to, say, the first 10 or 12 years of our lives, that period of time, is to get more awareness, to get more knowledge, to get more information regarding our experiences and the other experiences of people that may have been involved. So this idea of abandonment now is not seen in a narrow frame, but in fact is in a much broader, deeper, higher kind of context. As I was saying earlier, a baby born and then moments later is whisked away to be cleaned up by nurses instead of being given to the mother is likely to have feelings of abandonment. That disconnection is going to be stark for that baby. And I would say that a baby that wants to be fed or wants to be held, but who isn't, can feel abandoned. A baby who's crying and wants to be picked up, but isn't, can feel abandoned. A child who wants toys or to be allowed to crawl around and touch anything and everything, but isn't given the power to do that, isn't given complete satisfaction, can feel abandoned. Just think, every one of us has had those experiences and likely had those feelings of abandonment that we were prevented from connecting to what it is we wanted, a breast, a warm body, a toy, or something on a table that we wanted to reach for and touch, and we couldn't make that connection. One of the greatest challenges for human beings is to become aware of the real source, capital S, that fulfills their needs. the real thing that we want to be connected to, the real source of happiness and freedom from pain and suffering. That's what we want. We want to know the real source. Or do we? Or do we? We want to know the convenient source. But let's go back to infants. I'll say infants new to physicality. You know, it's like, you could say, wow, they're experiencing physicality. They see things now that are physical. I got it. Physical things are all there is. And, well, I guess we have to have control over physical things, to include our parents, our siblings, other people, and objects in our environment. That's where my connectedness comes from. That's where my sense of security comes from. That's how I overcome the fear of the pain of abandonment, is to connect to all these physical things whenever, however I want to. Yeah, I wonder if this is true. If, as human beings, we go through, say, predictable phases regarding connection, abandonment. Just think of this as over a period of time. As spiritual beings, say, before we're born, we've got to be, I would guess, completely connected. In utero, we're physically connected, but not necessarily emotionally connected. And all of that depends on the condition emotionally and mentally and physically and financially, et cetera, of our parents. Maybe they're emotionally available to us. Oh, I love the thought we're going to have a baby. I love this baby. I love this baby. Oh, this is so fantastic. Or maybe not. So depending on the level of connection or abandonment that we experience in utero, then we've got birth. Now, we know that's a physical act of disconnection because we're going to individuate in the matter of, I don't know, hours, depending on how long that labor is. And then once we emerge from our mothers, what we're going to do is have that umbilical cord cut. Boom. Now we are completely separated. We're completely disconnected from our physical source of being, which was our mother and her womb up to this point. It's like, yikes, that individuation is an absolute necessary fact. I mean, you can't really be an individual unless you individuate. And so after approximately 9 months, that's what's going to happen. So you can imagine there's a fear of pain on the mother's part and pain on the mother's part and passed on to us and our own physical pain because of the physical duress that our little bodies are going to experience. We're going to be picking all of that up during that process. So the process of individuating hasn't yet occurred yet, but we're going to go, oh, this is painful, this is painful, this disconnection is going to be painful, as we know it is. Right after birth, when that umbilical cord is cut, then we are physically, completely disconnected. And if we're whisked away, then it's even more stark in our experience. But we recognize it's just a matter of time, and we're allowed to periodically reconnect to what I'll call to the mothership. We connect to the mothership for feedings and to be held and talked to and changed and so on. And then we're going to resume our state of being abandoned, disconnected. We're taken away. We're put in a crib or bassinet or something, and boom, disconnected. We learn early on that being fed, being held, being touched, being talked to, reduce the feelings of abandonment. And if we discern that earlier, you know, squawking more often, crying more often, raising a ruckus more often might get us picked up more often. So, I know how to overcome abandonment. Raising hell, bawling like a baby, because I'm a baby, might do it. A while later, a phase that we're going to go through is we try to balance our growing need for independence. You know, we're pushing the control away, people picking us up and tickling us and trying to kiss us and restrain us, and we're trying to experience freedom. We want to be able to do stuff on our own, and once we begin to crawl and so on and pick up things and put them in our mouths and touch things to find out what they are all about, this learning process, we've got that going on while we've got this ever-present need to stay connected. to avoid the feelings of abandonment. So we want freedom, and we want connection. Freedom, connection, freedom, connection, freedom. It's like, ooh, that's a balancing act that we spend a lot of time trying to develop. And lots of people are not that effective at doing it because here we are, 50, 60, 70, 80, 100 years later, we are, oh, that's what I was trying to do. I was trying to balance my need for freedom and my need to be connected. Later on in that phase, we're going to add physical targets as these are the things that we need in order to avoid abandonment, the pain of abandonment, the fear of the pain of abandonment. You know, if I have enough clothes and if I'm stylish enough and I have stereo and I have all these gadgets, all the stuff that's hyped on TV nowadays, and even back in the day when before it wasn't so prevalent, if we can be with the in crowd, right, I'll be, that's my tribe. My tribe is the in crowd as compared to being an outcast. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. And then we think that if we can keep adding these material things to our individuality, ooh, it's making me more, it's making me more. I've got a lot of shoes, I got a lot of dresses, I got a lot of suits, I got a lot of shirts, I got a lot of ties, on and on and on and on. It makes me feel like I might be able to keep abandonment by my friends or acquaintances or my family away. And then later on, we'll learn this. Money, material possessions, status symbols, and so on. Those things, we're going to chase those things incessantly because we've been told, erroneously, that these things are the source of happiness. If you have enough money, you're going to be happy. If you have enough cars, you're going to be happy. If you have enough stuff, if you have enough junk, you're going to be happy. One of these latter phases is going to be the idea that when we run into real challenges in life, such as illness, or divorce, or loss of work, or a loss of a loved one, then we start to reevaluate the source of our solutions to abandonment. But in my work, I recognize this. Most people, before they will get there, would have tried every physical means possible. They'll use material means, right? And finally, they get to the point of exhaustion. It's like, wow, that didn't work. Hopeless. That's the wrong direction to go in. This is, you see it in medical approaches to the chemical approach to illness. It's like, I guess that wasn't it. Okay, the surgical approach. No, that wasn't the solution either. Replacement of body parts. No, that wasn't the solution. Chemo and radiation. No, that wasn't the solution to the problem of illness. People use get-rich-quick. They get tricked into get-rich-quick schemes to deal with financial problems. That's struggling and struggling and struggling. And that doesn't turn out to be the solution. So I'm thinking that one of the final phases, and maybe the final phase, and maybe this is an old adage that we've heard. You know, when we're looking for something, the thing we're looking for is always in the last place we look. Well, you know what? Because once we find what we're looking for, we stop looking. If we went to the first place where what we want is, then it would be a very short search. It would be a not much time spent in the hunt. We wouldn't spend that much time looking for what we want where it isn't. We would have gone to right where it is. And ultimately, we're going to turn to the spiritual level, the source of our being, the source of everything. And I'm capitalizing those first letters, S and B, and source of our being, and capital S and source of our everything, capital E. And we go there sometimes after we've looked everywhere else. This is when we're going to realize that we were never abandoned. We were never abandoned. We weren't abandoned because of something we did, who we are, or for something we aren't, and for something we didn't do. We were never abandoned for any reason. We have always been connected to our source of life. How do you know that? Because you're alive. I'm alive. That's how we know we've never, this life force, this flow, it's a stream of life, has always been bubbling up in us. Sometimes we deny it. Sometimes we interfere with it really, really dramatically. But the bottom line is we were never abandoned by it. We've been always connected to the source of our physicality. And by that, I'm referring to Mother Earth. Think of it. Every cell in our bodies, every bone in our bodies, every hair on our bodies, has come out of the materials that were present in the soil and the water and the air of the earth. Everyone. It's during this phase where we recognize going to the source, capital S. Now, all of a sudden, we start to look at our experiences in a broader context. Space between us and another person can be recognized. Instead of being looked at as abandonment, maybe it was freedom. Maybe we were granted independence. Maybe we were experiencing having room to grow, freedom from smothering control, and so on. Give me my space. Maybe we were being given our space. When we're open to new interpretations of our previous experiences, which to me is the only way we can grow our awareness, if we hold on to the awareness that we had when we were six-year-old kids, then there is no room for new awareness that we could have as 56-year-old kids or 66-year-old kids or 76-year-old kids. We need to be open to new interpretations of our previous experiences. And as we do that, we start to become aware that, you know what? We were being blessed and we were being cared for in ways that we didn't recognize at the time, but for the future, they were going to contribute a great deal to our spiritual growth as compared to, say, our ego's desire as children for immediate comfort at all times, under all circumstances, no matter what else was going on in our environments. As we start to expand our view of what really happened, we can free ourselves from carrying the weight, and it's a heavy weight, of the fear of the pain of abandonment. And so that constantly has to be weighed in our evaluations when it comes time to, I want to create, I got to weigh the pain of abandonment. I got to factor that in. And, you know, if I do or be or have something, once we can release that heavy weight, now all of a sudden we realize, wow, I'm so much freer. I'm so much more connected to the Creator. And this freedom of expression, this freedom of taking in the energy that I want, translating it the way I want, expressing it the way I want, for my highest good, for the highest good of others, this is fantastic. As we look during prayers or meditation or as we do the healing codes at events of abandonment, we're going to be able to recognize that we can let go of this viewpoint. It's all about me. It's all about me. And when we do, we start to see that what we interpreted as abandonment was really the mental, the emotional, the physical awareness of other people being acted out by them in their own self-interest, which is the only way all human beings can behave. We all act in our own self-interest based upon our level of awareness. The lower the level of our awareness, the more like cavemen and the more brutal we will tend to be. As our awareness expands, the more like saints we'll be, and we recognize that other people's self-interest is equivalent to our own, and this harmonious interaction between us is really the key to happiness. And we get this point. Those people that abandoned us, quotes, did so because they felt abandoned, and they were acting out of the fear of the pain of abandonment, and they saw us sometimes as the threat, as the danger, as a demand or a burden that they didn't have the capabilities to handle because they didn't have the awareness to reach out in thought and feeling to divine consciousness and ask for enlightenment, but instead thought they had to do it all on their own. As we make this shift of it's all about me to recognizing, no, it's not, everybody is expressing their own awareness and their own self-interest, and we can now go to a higher level and recognize that we can extend our energy to be the connecting link. We can be the connecting tissue. We can send that connecting energy out to other people. We can reduce their sense of abandonment. We can be causative and help other people heal the cellular memories of abandonment, because we have arrived at the conclusion that we never were abandoned, neither are they, and we can help raise their awareness by demonstrating love and connection. I'd like to end this service with a prayer. This is the pluralized version of the prayer from letter 8 of Christ Returns Reveals Startling Truth. Father, Mother, Life, you are our life, our constant support, our health, our protection, our perfect fulfillment of every need, and our highest inspiration. We ask you to reveal the true reality of yourself to us. We know it is your will that we shall be fully illumined, that we may better receive awareness of your presence within and around us. We believe and know this is possible. We believe that you protect and maintain us within perfect love. We know that our eventual purpose is to express you. As we speak to you, we know you are perfectly receptive of us, for you are universal loving intelligence, which has so marvelously designed this world and brought it into visible form. We know that as we ask you to speak to us, we are sending out a consciousness searchlight into your divine consciousness, and as we listen, you will be penetrating our human consciousness and coming ever closer to our increasingly receptive minds and hearts. We commit ourselves and our lives into your care. Thank you. It is so. Amen.